Hello everyone, and welcome to the most open world game dev podcast in the world, House of Games. Today, I'm joined by my host, Otto, and a very special guest, Tisto. But before I give you the world, let us open that door and see what this week's episode has to offer of House of Games.
Welcome everyone to this very newest episode of House of Games. As usual, we have a special guest with us. Could you tell us about yourself? And then you have a YouTube channel, which is sort of an interesting project. And then sort of combined with that, you also have a very interesting niche with your game development. So please go ahead and tell us all about you.
Thank you. It's a hard question. There's a lot of things there. I don't know if my ADHD can remember everything.
Yeah, but starting off, who are you?
I am Tisto Blomberg. I am a game developer in north of Sweden, in Jörn. I'm currently at Mind Detonator, a game incubator. And more things about me, like maybe the most interesting thing, one of the most interesting things is I studied AI, artificial intelligence and cognitive science. So psychology and philosophy is very interesting to me. So I always try like finding new ways to look at things, finding new perspectives and looking at things in new ways, exploring unexplored things. So yeah, I've done a bunch of stray jobs, small stray jobs, and then 2019 I decided to become a game developer, and I bought this masterclass course with Will Wright, the maker of The Sims, and I did that, and I bought a license for Game Maker Studio 2, and then I started to make games. I just started with like this Space Invader tutorial, and yeah. From there, I've gone into what all of the different projects that I do now.
How many projects are you working on now?
It's uncountable. It's not just game dev. It's uncountable. I have many ideas. Like, I have so many ideas. And then some of them I bring into, like, planning stage. And then, yeah. But game-wise, I have five games that is in, like, I think are good game ideas that can have possibility to be successes. The biggest one I'm working on now is Game Changers. That's the biggest one. And I'm doing my live streams on YouTube on that. And actually, I think when this podcast airs, I'm running the Kickstarter for that one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, hopefully. Mm. And then I have this wonderful game that I've been working on since last year. It's called Stalu Artna, and it's a Sami language learning game for mobile. I'm working together with this lector from Umeå University, Hanna Utakoski, and she's a teacher in North Sami. So we want to create this game together. So that's one of the games, and she's already done the game design and everything. So in that project, we're looking for funding. We know how much money we need, and we're looking for funding for that game. And then, should I go through all of the five ideas?
Yeah, sure. Give us an elevator pitch for each of them, and then we'll just dig deep into one of them, I guess.
All right. Okay, so that was Stalu Artna. And then I'm working together with Earth Organization for Sustainability and Endrik Lescure to make Climatopia. His idea is to make like a top-down strategy game to learn climate problems and how to solve them. You're gonna run like this global activist group and influence world leaders within a couple of years. You're gonna like prevent the temperature from rising. So that's game number two. And then game number three is Space Laundry. This is just a small idea stage game where the idea is just teaching the basics of laundry, like the laundry symbols and how to use detergent and stuff like that. And in order to make it fun for kids and like play for the adults, it's to make a space team. So you wash these clothes with four arms in the sweater or stuff like that.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I really like that idea. But I don't have any team to work with that idea yet. So it's just in the idea stage right now.
I've got to ask straight away, like, have you ever finished a project? Like, I feel like I asked this to a lot of guests we have, like, the problem
when you're too
creative, it's like too many balls in the air and all that. Do you feel like you have control over all of these things?
Today, I have quite good control, but I also know from experience that in order to be motivated and inspired, you have to go with your gut. You have to go with, like, go with the flow and just do it, even if you might fail or even if your motivation might run out next week. Like, because I've done that so many times, so I'm really quick on making up a new idea. Like, I have mastered Google Sheets making, recent couple of years I mastered making like a budget for a game and making a pitch for a game. I have made so many pitches and I've had so many game ideas and almost none of them have been accomplished. The one I'm most proud of is my two-week VR second-hand action simulation experience I made last summer. That one is also on my YouTube channel. I don't know how I made it, but in 2 weeks I made my first VR game. So I actually finished that one, but I'm pretty sure it's because I tried and failed so many times and I just like... Yeah, I don't know. So, like when the inspiration runs out, I think you just gotta accept that. And then like next time you have a little bit more experience and maybe some slightly more developed tools to facilitate more inspiration and find more solutions and find more opportunities and ways to succeed.
Yeah, the only issue I have with this approach is that it's so hard to get anything done. Like I also sit on a million game ideas, but I tend to just work on one until I finish it. But what I've sort of learned through my mistakes and all that is that you can sort of, because it is a problem to stay motivated especially and not let other ideas take over, because in that case I feel like I would never get done with anything. But one thing I learned was that if you try to get all the, especially when you work alone and you do everything yourself, like try to get all the boring stuff out of the way as soon as possible or a big chunk of it, and then you do the stuff you enjoy the most with games. So in my case, it's the art stuff I like to make the most. So the current game I'm working on now, I have done almost all the game mechanics, the coding stuff. It's almost done. And now I can sort of play around more with the art and stuff like that. Like all these placeholders I have all over the game, I can start working on them and implementing what's actually going to be there and so on. So that way I learn to sort of stay motivated, but also like not abandon ship as soon as it gets boring or as soon as I don't feel motivated enough. And I also keep checklists. So when I don't feel motivated at all, I look at the checklist and I go sort of, well, I have no motivation whatsoever today, so I'm just gonna watch some Sun in Philadelphia while drawing, you know, something in the game, because that's always like a neat thing I enjoy doing, like drawing stuff, like I said, the art stuff. So that's the way I've learned to make games, but actually finish them. It feels, what you said, it sounds scary to someone like me, because I don't think I could finish anything if I worked on too many things at the same time. I really don't have a question following up on this one.
I love it. It's the same. I've gone through the same.
Yeah. I was curious about your Game Changers project. Since I don't think we will have time for all of them, all of the projects, but the Game Changers one to start off with, could you give us just a helicopter view of what that is and how you work with that together with your streaming, I suppose?
Yeah, I'd love to talk about Game Changers. So Game Changers is a combination of this love for game jams. Like, I think game jams, like if you want to be successful with games, going to game jams is the absolute best way, I think. So Game Changers is a combination of the absolute fun you have with game jams and the release of perfectionism. Like, game jams are usually like 2 days or something, the game jams I've been on. So you don't have perfection. You don't have time for perfection. You just make something fun together with people. And then, like, in the end, as we said previously, most games I've seen started on game jams fail. They don't succeed. Like, they're not finished. They're abandoned. But once you succeed and you learn how to prioritize by failing so many times, you can succeed with something very simple. And so that's one part of the Game Changers idea. And the other part is that since I've gone through this game developing journey and talking about games and stuff with my friends, like the people that are not in gaming, they're not programmers or so, they have so many great ideas. I love to talk about my game ideas with my family and friends because they come with perspectives that I never thought about. Like they don't think in limitations of programming. They just, like, if you have this brainstorming atmosphere, it's just fun to bounce ideas, and that can give inspiration and motivation to work further. And connected to that with Game Changers, it's so fun to get an idea from someone and you both love the idea, and then I say, damn, I can make this. I can make something simple out of this. And then you make something simple with it, and then you show it to the other person, and they're like amazed because if they're not a programmer or something, they don't know how it works. They just, okay, we agreed on doing this and you made this, and this is, and then the ideas start building on top. The basic idea of Game Changers is actually to bring these parts together. So I'm going to make the game, but I'm not going to make any decisions. There will be 100 people that will support it through the Kickstarter. There will only be 100 places, and these 100 people will vote. They will come with suggestions, do a cat, do a dog, make it 2D, make it 3D, make it colorful, make it dark, make it post-apocalypse, have this music in, da-da-da. And then everyone just votes on it. So it becomes a democratic, interesting process, and I'll just do that.
Oh, that's cool. That's really interesting.
Yeah. I really hope it works. I really hope the scary thing is democracy is... it's usually quite boring, I think. Like, going to elections and voting is quite boring. So right now I'm working, like, how can I make it more fun? So yeah, that's the biggest challenge I'm working on right now. But I love challenges, so yeah.
Cool. And have you built anything for the game thus far, or are you gonna start on deciding soon?
There is no game. There is no game, because even the first decision, you can see that also everyone is welcome to look at my YouTube channel. I'm doing this like test phase now, where I show you, like, I write in the chat a couple of game ideas. Like, recently I wrote about a boombox that's going to be eating dancers. And then I say, like, okay, this is a one submission idea. Now we're going to make a decision on what game we're going to make. Okay, that's the game we're going to make. And then the next step, like the first phase of making a game, as I would make it, is to make like the game design document and inspiration. So maybe selecting some music, maybe having some ideas, maybe some concept art. Here I use AI to generate some cool, fancy images. And then you get like this inspiration and you start building like this idea. And then you take it to the next step. Like, what kind of core features would it be? So in this case, I decided to make it 2D side-scroller. So I'm going to code the features, and then I'm going to upload the result on YouTube. And then it's like, on top of that, we build the next step, and the next step, and next step. So what I come with, what I've done is not a game. I've done a process where you start with inspiration, then game design, then focus on story, graphics, and music, and sounds. And then there has to be some uncertainty on what kind of decisions we make after that, because we don't know exactly what we're going to do. That's part of the excitement as well. So yeah, there's no game. There's just a process. And in the end, we're going to create a game on Game Changers.
I'm curious though, like, I remember when Fallout 76 came out, the online game, and then it had no NPCs, and then Bethesda, whatever the company is called, or how you pronounce it, they came out and said, well, you are the NPCs. And then you had, like, soon after release, there was some kind of racist guy sitting and being racist. And then they banned him. And I thought, as much as that's not cool, it would still make sense in that world that it would be some racist asshole walking around being racist. But then they, you know, they banned him for doing that. So it was kind of like weird that they basically asked us to be the NPCs, but when we didn't play by some rules or things that they didn't like, they got kicked out. Even though you have games where they are racist asshole, they're probably someone in Grand Theft Auto, I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised, right? So it sort of makes sense.
Probably, yeah. Grand Theft Auto, yeah.
Yeah, but even like in a Fallout game, post-apocalyptic world and all that stuff, it sort of makes sense. It's somewhat fitting in a way.
Yeah.
But all that being said, it sort of made me think about this democratic way of making a game. Surely there must be some sort of rules, because in a democracy, I mean, it means that not everyone gets what they want in a democracy because you vote for things. So surely, like, if you have 100 assholes backing your project, it just turned into this Nazi naked chic rape game. At some point, you have to sort of step in, whoa, this is not what I want to do.
Yeah, it's not going to be, there's not going to be a porn game. It's going to be like below 18, it's going to be safe. I don't know about racism. I completely understand your idea. Like, having a racist in a post-apocalyptic world, it makes sense on so many levels. And at the same time, you want to make a game that feels good to play. If you're a black person and you encounter someone who is acting like in real life in a post-apocalyptic game, maybe it feels too real. Maybe you don't like to play that game. Like, maybe that's too much then. So I kind of get, like, if that's the case, I kind of understand that. But I think the most important part, partly, like, there's only going to be 100 spots. So if there are 100 people who have, like, a strong idea, they want to make a, I don't know, some kind of crazy game that not everyone would like, then sure, we'll make it. Like, they supported the project. But yeah, we will not break any laws. There will be no porn, no nudity, no, nothing like that. But it's still, I want to keep it like open as an experiment. So yeah.
Yeah, I think it sounds really cool. It just, as soon as I heard you describe this, I just thought about that Fallout 76 thing. It was sort of like, when you give people too much freedom, there will always be someone who is going to be a dick about it. Like you said, it's not going to be porn. It's going to follow the rules or whatever. So then I hope it people stick to that. So I'm very curious to see what it turns out to be.
So I have another conundrum about democracy. So I guess you would have to have it sort of the cycle of the, or the development cycle of the game would have to be in some way linear. Because I think this is a really unlikely scenario, but I'm just curious. So say that 1 week, like 70% wants the, I don't know, this sword to be green, or they want this story change. And then when you actually implement it, they realize, oh, this wasn't what we wanted. We want to vote to revert that thing, and they do that. But you can't, I guess, just go back and forth forever. You have to have, at some point, some things will just have to be final. So do you have a plan for that, or maybe this is a weird scenario, but I'm just curious.
So wouldn't it be like each election lock things in? So when they vote for the green sword, yeah, so it's locked to be a green sword.
Yeah. Yeah, I've battled with that. Yeah, that's like making a business in general and making a game development company or making a game, like, it makes total sense to go in a direction and try some stuff out, making a green sword, making a character that does this and that, making a world, and then discovering, like, oh, that's not as fun, but when I go and juggle these melons, or when I eat melons in the game, that's much more fun. So let's focus more time on that and just ditch the sword because it just distracts. So I've been thinking of this idea. I don't know if I'm going to implement it or not, but that you can vote to change a previous decision. So it's like, if we voted to make the main character like a big goat, maybe, Then next week we have 3D model of the goat or something. And they and then maybe like the submissions would be focused maybe on music then, or maybe the sounds of the goat. And one of the submissions would be like, it can sound like this, or this person on Fiverr, I like their voice, we should hire that one, or this suggestion, or the suggestion we should change the goat into another. And if the majority votes to change the goat, maybe that could work. I don't know. But I think that's one of the things. I'm not going to promise to have this in the first version of the Game Changers, but it might occur if we feel as a community that it makes sense, that it makes the whole experience more fun. But generally, yeah, you want to make that. That's why I think it's important that I have so much experience from game dev and making a lot of games and working on game studios, especially startup game studios, discovering we made all of this, but it's not enough. We don't get players to play. What should we do? We need to pivot. We need to change. So that's why I come in with this skeleton like plan with inspiration, game design document. Then when that's like locked into place, we will go next step and make story, graphics and music, and like do it in a stepwise manner, going from abstraction and idea into more like more tangible decisions and more details as we go. And in the end, it will be stuff like, how high should the player jump? Should it be 40 centimeters or 45 centimeters?
Wow, yeah, it's super interesting to me. Like, I mean, this sounds like a nightmare for me. Like, not having things planned out or no rules. And stuff like that. I tend to rant a lot about this.
It's close to anarchy. It's close to anarchy. I've had a lot of experience with non-profit organizations, and they are known for being very unorganized. And like running study circles with a bunch of people come with different ideas, and there's just this vague plan, like, and nobody knows what to do. Like, I've been making this urban gardening project in Umeå a couple of times, and that's like, there's a lot of ideas, a lot of stuff, and then you don't know even if people show up. So you've planned all this, but then like, so you have to adapt. And if like, it is hard to be a leader in general. Like, being a leader in general is hard. Like, especially if it's about innovation and new stuff.
Yeah, but it sounds like you're surrounded by a bunch of hippies sitting in a drum circle, just smoking weed and not doing anything.
It depends. Sometimes it's very high performance people who are really like doctors and stuff, who really knows what they're doing. And then, yeah, they like it because it's different for everyone.
I would love to join one of these things if I'm ever in Sweden. Let me join one day and see how crazy I go. I can imagine it's a hell of an experience, and also, you know, get a different perspective.
Yeah.
So I have two questions about the project. So first of all, how long is one iteration of, so say that you want to implement a goat boss character, 1 week, and then
1 week. Yeah, so I've tried a couple of different systems, but the one I ended up settling on is that every week on Saturday, probably on Saturdays, I will run a stream, and during that stream I present like, now we need to make this decision. What character are we gonna do? What's the main character? And then everyone makes decisions and stuff like that. And then I spend the week creating that character. And then next stream, I'll present, this is what I've done this week. Now we need to decide what's the backstory of this character. So then we focus on the story.
Is the whole idea, like you talked about before with game jams, that you finish, like it's unfinished product. So you only have 1 week to make the main character. Does that mean that if you don't finish him on time, or you don't, let's say you didn't have time to add his hat, like, it's finished, like this is the character, you got 1 week to make it?
Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
Yeah, that's why usually people talk about deadlines, but I like to have a different perspective, and I call it time box. So the difference is, for me, I don't know if there is a difference in reality, but for me, in with the deadline, you feel pressure that you have to succeed. And if you don't meet the deadline, you failed. Like if you do, you have a homework, you try to meet the deadline and then you don't submit it in time. And the teacher says, you failed. I don't think that's a natural approach. And it's much, much more fun to think in tie box. Like, you have this amount of time. You now have 1 hour to write a story for this character. When the hour is gone, whatever you have written, that is what we will build upon.
Cool.
So it's much, much more fun. There basically is no failure. There is no way to fail.
Interesting.
But you can be disappointed by what other people do, of course.
Wow, it sounds so Swedish, all of it. Like, you can't fail, there's no winner, no losers, we don't pick teams anymore, everyone is a winner, no one is a... I think it sounds really cool, but it is really, like, the sort of stuff that drives me nuts, which makes me even more intrigued. I want to see this. I really hope it succeeds. But you said only 100 backers. How much would one have to back?
I haven't decided yet. I'm uncertain.
Or is it going to be sort of an auction, like the highest bidders get to choose?
No, I would love to do an auction, but I've thought about that. Partly, I just want to run a Kickstarter, and Kickstarter, I don't think the platform allows for that. Like, it's not easy to make that. And I want to make it possible for anyone. Like, I don't want to be like having 100 millionaires giving $1 million and then nobody else has a chance. Like, it's not going to feel as fun, you know? It's going to feel like, yeah, obviously they got it because they have much, much more money than me. So I'm not going to have an auction.
Yeah. And two more questions about time, I guess. So first of all, when is this project done? And second of all, say that you have 100 backers, one of them dies or just loses interest or whatever it might be. So after a while, you only have 75 backers. What happens then? Go ahead.
What I will do, like, if we only get like 75 backers or 90 backers and there are some votes left, I will give the votes to the viewers in the live stream chat.
Cool.
Yeah. And it will be different every time. So it will be like, if you just show up, you have a chance to have the vote. Something like that.
Hmm. And how long is the whole project?
Oh yeah, I would love to run this project for a whole year. That would be insane. But it needs more funding for that. So I'm going to have that as a stretch goal. So I'm going to have different stretch goals. Like, the minimum I can do it in a cool way is 1 month. So at least 1 month, and then it would be like 4 weeks. It would be 4 streams. It would be basically just game design, then story, graphics, and music. And then one stream, yeah, it would be very compact. Still much, much larger than a game jam. The stretch goal, next stretch goal will be like 3 months, being able to run it for 3 months. And that will obviously make it a bigger game and more detailed in the decisions and more stuff like that. So gonna have at least 1 month, stretch goal, 3 months or 6 months or 1 year. So we'll see where we land.
Yeah, when you said you're gonna spend like 1 week, for example, to make the main character, are you talking 40-hour work weeks, or is this something you would have to do after work?
This would be my work.
Okay.
Yeah, the funding will will enable me to work on this and deliver this game together with everyone. Enable us to make these projects. Yeah.
Cool. Well, we really hope that you get all the funding you need so you can actually do it full time. But speaking of that, how do you manage your time? So you talked a little bit about budgeting time earlier. So do you have any tips for budgeting your time to make something successful and, you know, move forward, so to speak? Because I think, for me at least, it's often that you have the problem that you sort of dig yourself into a hole and you're not able to get out of it, and you spend loads of time with stuff that doesn't really matter or isn't that important in the end. So do you have any tips for that?
I think that, like, this is a absolutely huge question, something I've studied for a long, long time and tried a bunch of different methods on. As a core solution, I would say to learn prioritization. being able to saying no to things in order to say yes to things. And it's a very abstract thing. Like if I say teach yourself prioritization, like even if you ask ChatGPT, how can I learn prioritization? It might be very, very hard and abstract. So one concrete solution that I'm trying right now, and I think is absolutely great, is to set a daily stop time. For me, it's 15 o'clock every day. And if the clock turns 15, I cannot work anymore. If I'm in the middle of an email, I'm not allowed to finish it. I have to feel like here's actually where hard time kind of failure kicks in, but you don't need to feel like it's failure because you know that you should do it today, but you did it. The time has ended. It's the end of the day and you decided it's the end of the day. I don't work past this. So this enables you to have leisure time and learn how to switch off, because that's very important to learn how to switch off and do other things and relax your brain and eat healthy, sleep, talk to people and relax. And it will also teach you prioritization, because if you actually do that, like if you reach the end of the day and you are doing something, maybe you're programming something, maybe programming a function, and the time hits, if you stay disciplined and say, no, I cannot work past this time, then it will trigger a better planning on your part. You will start to understand that you need to prioritize every day. You start to see like what can fit in a day and what cannot fit in a day. Yeah. So I think that's like there are so many things that you can do, but that's one thing I'm trying now, and I feel like it's one good thing. It's hard. It's discipline related because you have to say no to yourself. You have to stop. And that's really hard. But if you can do it, you learn prioritization, and then you will also have time to relax. And yeah, I think you will become more efficient with your time.
Another way to learn how to do these things is just to have a child. Then you can't work after a certain hour. I never learned how to stop working.
That's cheating.
Yeah, I cheated in the end. But I'm curious, do you have that sort of... do you have a... Can you shut yourself off after work or...?
Yeah, what I do is I train. I exercise. I do something every day. Like I make sure I exercise 3 times a week for 20 minutes aerobic tempo, something like jogging or gym working out. And then the other days when I enter the end time, I do something like orientation or just going for a walk or doing something with the body that feels healthy and feels nice. So I kind of look forward to it, actually.
I think it's the worst, like around 4 o'clock. I know my wife finished work and she's on her way to pick up my son. And then I sit there with some code and it's just like so stressful. But something I learned from this is to do the coding in the morning and after like 2 p.m. So after 2 p.m. I don't touch the code because I know I would need more time. And it's just going to be a headache to that stress around 4 o'clock, and then when you don't finish it, you're worried that you're not going to remember the next day what you did. So that's one way to...
That's smart. Yeah. I tried a similar thing where I just I love, as you, I love coding in the morning before looking at emails, before having any meetings. My mind is clear, I can focus on the problems, I'm not distracted. And then previously I had like I'm coding before lunch, and then after lunch I'm open, I like open my door, I talk to other people and have meetings and say like I'm available for meetings at this time. It's quite restricting sometimes, but I try to do that as well.
Odo, do you have a how does it look like for you when you finish your real job? Can you shut it off or...
Right, so for me, I guess usually out of necessity I usually don't work that much on evenings, but I think that's more because of you have to do cooking and some cleaning, and I don't have a washing machine either, or a dishwasher, so it's manual dishes,
stuff. Washing clothes by the creek.
Yeah, exactly. But I do have a washing machine, but not a dishwasher. So there's those things. So usually it's mornings for me also, when I am completely alone and there's nothing that needs to be done. So I try to get up, try to get a good night's sleep, and then get up as early as possible and then do as much as I can. And then also, whenever it's a complete day for some reason where I'm completely alone and there's nothing planned, I just try to work as much as possible on those days. But it is a little bit that for me. So right now I'm not doing that much game development because of the podcast, ironically. I love doing it, don't get me wrong, but it takes a lot of time. And it's most of my free time that I have nothing else scheduled. It's always the podcast and editing that. So for me, it's, you know, you think about it sort of all the time, like, when can I get the next, you know, spot? Because I want to reach that point. Right now, it's sort of held together by duct tape that you sort of edit it, finish editing it shortly before it's going to air. But we usually have about 5 or 6 episodes recorded more than we have released. So there is stuff to edit. So if I can just get it to the point where I can edit it faster than, like, get more than 1.0 episodes out per week, then eventually I'm gonna catch up, and then I'm gonna be, even if I miss a week, I have another 6 weeks or something to catch up. So, and at that point, I think it will be a lot more relaxed. Yeah, so at the moment, I think it's just trying to do as much as possible. But then, you know, every now and then I do take, sort of try to take a break from it. But yeah.
Do you feel like if you would achieve that speed, 1.5 episode edited per week, do you think that, can you say no to yourself? Like, instead of adding things to the podcast or slightly editing things to make it slightly better, can you say no to yourself and say, like, no, I've achieved my goal, now I can focus on programming? Or are you gonna get into the details, and how are you gonna, yeah?
I think that's probably one of the issues, that I'm sort of a perfectionist, because I wanna get all the ums and all of those things out of it, and I want the, you know, all the echo gone, and I want, you know, there's a lot of things, and...
Exactly, it's the same everywhere. Everyone has it, yeah?
Yeah, exactly, but there's just, maybe it's a perfectionist problem, I think. But I think now I've recently started to edit podcasts on twice the speed. So that way, I think that's going to be good for me, because in part, I think that's been one of the sort of bottlenecks, that it takes time to listen to everything when editing. So now when I try that, it's gone a lot faster. And also, I think I am gonna miss a lot of stuff that I don't hear when I play it on 1x speed. So that also means that I can, you know, I will overlook stuff, and then when I'm finished with the whole edit and just listen back to it, I can sort of ignore the stuff that I left in there that might be like noise in the background or something, just because now I'm done with it. So maybe it's there's a light at the end of the tunnel, something like that.
Yeah, I think so. Like, if I can give an example from my, like, I do my live streams, and I also want to make a clip and post it on Facebook, and post it on TikTok, and send it to my Discord channels where I'm at. And sometimes I don't manage to do that. And then I'm just, okay, I didn't manage to do that. Time is ended. Now it's time for the next project.
Yeah.
I have this, I make these weekly, almost weekly vlogs from my game. So I just record gameplay, I put it together in Adobe, and then I record myself while watching it, and then I use that audio file and slap it in there. But I'm so tactile, what's that in English or Swedish? That's also Japanese, damn it. Not perfectionist. Tactile is like, meh, it's all right, like that. So I'm just sitting watching my own recordings while talking, and I just end up sitting there like, and here I'm So, like, I get lost in my own thoughts when I'm watching the stuff that I record myself. So it's super sort of laid back, but it's not meant to be that way. It's just that I can't really focus. I can't talk and look at the same time. I can't do two things at the same time. So I'm just sort of like get hypnotized by my own video, which is really weird. But yeah, I just record it one time, one cut only, and then out it goes. And it's just to show the progress of the game. And that's, I keep reminding myself about that all the time. It's just to show progress of the game and, you know, reach out to people or whatever.
Yeah, do the things that are fun. Like, if you like editing videos to perfection and you love that and you feel like, oof, this feels nice, then do that and get good at that and keep doing that. But if you feel like, it has to be better, don't do that. Do something that you like.
Yeah, Yaha said the same thing when he was on. Like, if you don't enjoy doing it, don't do it like that.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's also a trap. It's also a trap. Because if you do things that you don't like for a long time, you get good at it. So that, like, other people will ask you to do that because you're good at it. And you know you're good at it. And you know you should do it because you're good at it. But you don't want to do it. So don't dig that grave. Get good at things that you love.
But I would like to emphasize that doing the podcast, I really love it. And I think one of the absolute favorite parts of the week for me is doing the trailer, actually, for the episode. Because then you've edited the whole thing and you sort of have an idea of what the whole episode is about, and you can sort of create a small narrative of all of that content in like 45 seconds and add some nice music to it and things, and it's sort of like standing on a tall hill looking down at your creation, which is really, really amazing. So I'm just grateful that I get to do it. Absolutely
sweet.
Damn. It almost became an intervention.
Yes. Please save us.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is interesting, though, to have people's take on it. Like, hopefully there are other game devs listening to this, too, so they can sort of put themselves in our shoes for a second and see. Maybe they recognize themselves, or they can also think how they can improve their... I don't even remember how we ended up in this intervention.
Time management, I think, was the topic.
There we go, yeah.
So, you talked about the Kickstarter, so do you want to talk about that a little bit? When does it start and when does it end, and what is the end goal of it? Are there different tiers, or just give us a helicopter view of that?
Okay, I'm talking to Kickstarter now to improve it, so everything is not finalized, but when this airs, it should be live. So, if you're quick, go to Kickstarter, type Game Changers, and there you can see it. And I think there will be four tiers or four rewards. Kickstarter have this where you can write anything if you just want to support the project with $1 or whatever. And then I'm going to have four tiers. I'm going to have, you can buy the game for $1. You can buy the game for $1. So it's just supporting it in getting the game. And you don't know what game it is. So beware of that. You don't know what it is. But it's just $1. So
that's quite normal on Kickstarter. You usually don't know what you get there.
Yeah, exactly. The next reward is going to be the Game Changer. The Game Changer vote, where you become one of the 100 voters. It's just going to be 100 places. So I don't know if you have to be quick, or we'll see. And then I'm afraid to say my ideas on the price because of... Okay, I'm just going to skip that. You have to check the Kickstarter. And then the third reward is just goodwill. You can support the project because you really want it to happen, like with a larger sum. And then the last one is sponsorship. It's going to just be eight or nine places for sponsorship. And that's if you represent some kind of organization or a company and you want the logo in the beginning of the stream and in the game and in the end of the stream. So if a company wants to support it, like going crazy, like it's a big risk because I don't know what game it's going to be. So yeah, if you want to be a sponsor, that's one way of going. It's a simple sponsorship. So those four tiers or rewards is going to be.
So do you have any companies that you absolutely would not have as a sponsor? Say that, I don't know, Playboy want to sponsor you or something.
Oh, that's a tough one. I did not think about... I haven't thought that one through. That's dangerous. That's scary. Yeah, I might have to add some restrictions, like you cannot deal with adult content, maybe. But I kind of like these channels who do these wild things, like Vice do kind of cool documentaries about stuff, and Adult Swim make kind of like controversial streams, South Park. Like, I love that kind of like chaotic energy. So I kind of want to leave it open because it is a chaotic project. It is experimentation. It is adventure and uncertainty. So, but yeah, it might be, I don't know. I have to think that one through. I'll put some kind of requirements on the sponsorship.
Cool.
Worst case scenario, I'll refund. I'll do refund for the sponsor. I'll say, sorry, this doesn't work. So I don't know. Some gun producing company. I'm sorry, this doesn't work out. Here's your money back.
Interesting. Cool, I really look forward to seeing it because it's just the democracy aspect is very unique. I haven't heard that anywhere else, I think. Because people are usually so very restrictive with their vision of a game that they have, like, it's gonna be this, and even with members of the same team, they, or I can't speak for everyone, but there are people who never want to compromise with their vision. So this is quite the opposite, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, like if you're open-minded and not distracted, that's a great combination for teamwork.
Yeah, absolutely. And where do you stream, by the way?
I stream on YouTube, my own channel right now, Tistu Blomberg. Or you can look for Game Changers, maybe. I shot myself in the foot a bit because I write Game Changers with a couple of, like, it's lead speak, so a couple of letters is numbers. So it might be a bit hard to find sometimes, but I think you'll manage. We'll see.
Yeah, well, if you are watching this on YouTube, we are going to have subtitles and also links in the description, so you will find it that way. So no worries. Another thing I was just curious about, you said earlier that you also sort of have done a lot of game pitching. So do you have any, like, tell us about your experiences in that and how are you going to bring that to Kickstarter and your game in general?
Yeah, so I've noticed one, this is some great, I think this might be good information for all the indie developers and game developers in general. Like, if you're new to it, like, it's like, having the right marketing strategy is key to success, I think, to financial success. Like, you can make an absolutely beautiful game and it will not be known, and it can be absolutely amazing for those who play it. But marketing and selling is, you might not need to study it. You can still have a great marketing strategy. If you just do like devlogs, that's your marketing strategy. But yeah, pitching and stuff, I got into, like, I've studied very deeply now for a couple of months because Mind Detonator, the incubator here, they encouraged all the game studios, one which I worked at Fantasera Studio. They encouraged everyone to work on the pitch to get funding, next round funding, like for the game. So they gave us all of this absolutely great material to study pitches and talking about elevator pitches and like a short 20-second pitch you do in an elevator and all of this stuff. So then, yeah, so that's partly why I started and decided that, like, I saw that having the right marketing strategy, like, reaching your players, it's very, very important. Like, if you make, let's say you make a very, not an adult game, but like a strategy game that's aimed for adults, like, you do a lot of thinking and there's a lot of maybe text and numbers and stuff. It's very interesting. Maybe some deep philosophical questions, stuff like that. And you do your marketing on TikTok. I don't know if that will succeed because the people that look at TikTok are young and they might not be interested in this long strategic thinking. They want like 20-second things. So then you might be better off making something on YouTube maybe, or maybe even Reddit. I don't know all the channels. I don't know which one channel is the best one, but or have an old Discord channel or whatever. So I don't quite know, but I know that doing the right marketing strategy makes it a lot easier. Like if you reach your players and they start to give you feedback and you have a lot of players who love your game, they maybe wishlist it on Steam or stuff like that. They give you feedback on your game, it gives you inspiration. That's key, I think. So that's partly why I decided to make the Kickstarter, because I want to have that. Like, I haven't made a Kickstarter before. I want to have that on my belt. I want to know how to do it. Even if, however it goes, I'm going to be able to make a Kickstarter and I've learned more about it. Maybe I can help the other studios here or another game studio to run a Kickstarter, whatever. So, yeah. And generally, like, if you're a programmer and sitting alone in a basement somewhere, marketing might not be your strong point. So if maybe I can help somehow in the future, I don't know. We'll see how it goes, you know?
Cool, very cool. And as a last question for me, at least, I was just curious a little bit about Mind Detonator. So could you tell us about the incubator and how you got there and, you know, what are the requirements for getting into a...
Yeah, I'm sure they would love to me to talk about Mind Detonator. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. We'll possibly do a solo episode with them, but from your specific perspective at least, so...
Yeah, you should definitely invite them. But yeah, so from my perspective, last year I pitched one game idea to Mind Detonator, but you go to their website and you send your pitch to them. That one failed because I lost my team. One person started studying like graphical design and couldn't work. Like, so I lost a team that I couldn't work there. But I was very decided on working with game development. So I just, that period, I just decided I'm going to look up every game studio in Sweden. I'm going to talk to everyone and ask, do you need anything help? Like, I was so desperate to have a working game industry. I asked everyone, what are the challenges in your game studio? Like, how can I help your game studio? What can I do for you? And then I encountered Jesper Nilsson, the CEO of Fantasia Studio AB. And we hit it off. We had the same kind of energy. He's got a lot of energy. He works all the time, so much energy. So yeah, we got in touch through the Mind Detonator Discord chat there. I asked him, what are you working on? Do you need any help with anything? And then he needed help with animating characters, translating mocap data to animation in Unity for their trailer. So I said, I'm going to work like you. I know you, I don't have like animation on my CV and stuff like that, but I know how to learn fast. So can I work for free for you 1 month and just do something with animation with you? And if I prove myself and show that I do great work, you can trust me that you can hire me. So then we did that trailer, and the trailer was a success for The Last Realm. It's a great trailer. It's on YouTube. Just Google The Last Realm. It's amazing. I love it. Yeah, so, and then I got hired at Fantasia, which we're here in Jörn in Mind Detonator. So I moved to Jörn and started working here. But now Fantasia kind of left. So I started working on another project. I got in contact with another person here working on like a VR project. So I thought, like, can we make something work? I think he reached out to me. So I'm doing that this couple of last months. And now I'm doing the Kickstarter to see if I can fund this next exciting idea. Yeah, so that's my Mind Detonator journey.
Cool, very cool. And what do you get in return for getting into an incubator?
Oh, it depends on the incubator. You really have to get to know them before you get devoted. Like, it's so different, like the culture. And like, I would say, like, I've been in contact, I lived in Umeå before, and I was in contact with, was it the Game Hub, and is it Vinnova, or which game do you know? So I was with them for a while, And they're very focused on like the university kind of style, where you focus on a lot of knowledge. Everything has to be thought out, and you do this academic style. And Mindhunter is completely 180 reverse. There's like, just go for it. Just you need to reach out to these publishers, go to this gaming event, talk to them. You probably get only 20 seconds, talk to this one, then talk to this one, then talk to this one, and you have to refine your pitch. And it's like, it's so much business. Like, you gotta be able to adapt. You gotta be like, it's, yeah, and it's, it's, yeah, when you, it's kind of hard business. You have to think about like, oh, we got this much money, how much will it, like, we have to, like, when you get into Mindhunter, I think they've changed it now, so you start like with some kind of internship or something. Like, they're reworking on how you enter Mindhunter now. Previously it was like you get a lump of sum of money and then you start your project, but that's too, I think that was too much at the same time. Like, it was very hard for the studios here to learn all of the business knowledge that you need to learn, like administration, stocks, all the rules and regulation. It was so much, together with actually focusing on a project and deliver like a vertical slice or a demo, and then validating it with players and getting, like, there's so much to learn. So I think they've made a different process now where you, I don't know, you probably have to talk to them about their project, like the process now. So it's very focused. Like, they have Johan Linder, he worked on Nordsjön and like Arctic Games and stuff, and he knows a lot about the gaming culture. And yeah, and they have a bunch of other people as well, talented, like business focused people and stuff like that. So when I think when contacting an incubator, you should get to know them, and I think you should visit them before. Like, even if it's far, you should visit them, because here you become a part of the community. Like, if you don't like to hang around the people that are in this office building, it might not be the right place. Like, you should find a place where the people around you is like, yeah, fits your culture and your speed of development and your level of ambition and stuff like that. Yeah,
cool. Yeah, I think since we're approaching 1 hour, that's it for me. Rune, do you have any additional questions or anything?
No, that's good. Good stuff. I'm interested now to talk with this Mindhunter people as well.
Yeah, exactly. We should absolutely. We can perhaps talk after this episode. Maybe you have some context deets or something.
Yeah, go for it.
Cool.
Yeah, I'll give you contact links to some people, yeah.
Cool. And before we end the episode, do you have anything? I'm sure you have stuff to plug and where to send our listeners. So please give us the full list of where can you keep up to date with your progress and the Kickstarter and your streams and the game and everything, all of that.
Oh, great. So YouTube is my main channel. That's where I focus on all of my stuff. I do my live streaming, I do my videos live. So YouTube at Tissu Bloomberg. Maybe you can search for Game Changers at YouTube. If you have TikTok, you can also try to find me there, Tissu Bloomberg. I don't post there as often as YouTube, but if you like that format, I'm there as well. So yeah, that's, well, I'm on Facebook as well, but I don't know.
Yeah, just let us know what you want in the description of the episode and we'll make it happen.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks.
Nice. And also, that was a stream. So do you have like the Kickstarter? I guess we'll link to that as well.
Yeah. I keep forgetting, like, that should be live now. Yeah, please go to Kickstarter, look up Game Changers or Tissu Bloomberg. And yeah, like, if you like this kind of exciting, unexpected adventure, please support me. Then we can make this happen.
Cool. Very cool. Was there anything else anywhere, just so we're not forgetting anything? We have the streams, we have the Kickstarter. Anywhere else you want to keep people up to date?
Oh, I don't know. Well, yeah, I would love to, like, if you like the other game projects, especially Stalo Arna, like, if you want to support that somehow, you can look. I also have
So which one? Oh, that was the Sami language.
Yeah, Sami language game. Like if you have planned to learning Sami language, North Sami language, like maybe you have ancestors and you want to reconnect to them, like learning the language, or if you're representing a school and you think that you need some motivational interactive way for the students to learn North Sami language as well, please contact me. I'm also on YouTube there, or Facebook. We also have a Facebook page for Stalarna project.
Cool. We'll absolutely make sure to link that. And I think it's been a real pleasure to have you on the podcast. And I think...
The same. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been amazing. So, and you have so many things going on. So I would be absolutely delighted if we could do more episodes where we could talk about other of your projects. For example, that...
4 more games, 4 more episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There's at least four other episodes where we can dive deep into the different projects. That would be amazing.
Yeah. And next time I'll probably have 10 games.
We'll just have to like release daily or something to keep up.
Yeah, every hour.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. It's been a pleasure. And thank you, Rune, for being my co-host as always. Thank you everyone for listening, and we hope you keep updated with us as well and keep listening every week. So with that, I guess thank you everyone, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.